When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And perhaps one of those truths is we have on our mind, how can we age in the right place? And today we have somebody who's going to unpack that word right for you, so that you can begin to think about what is really right for you. There's many trends out there. There's many issues out there. We will cover as many as possible because we want to tweak your awareness. We have with us today Dr. Stephen M. Goland. He's a professor at the University of Florida in Gainesville. He was earlier an associate professor at the University of Chicago, for all you Chicago fans. And he is the author of many books, 140 papers for the field. He's one of those people we call the thought leaders in the field of how to age, where to age. He's the author of A Place to Grow Old, The Meaning of Environment in Old Age. He is the author of Elder Population Environments of Elder Populations by Wiley, and so much more. But I will also tell you that he is very thoughtful about this. He's not just somebody who writes down what's the latest trend. So thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Goland. And I want to open this up with something that you told me was very important, and that is for people to think not so much where they're going to live, but first who they want to live with. What do you mean by that?
So older people today, according to many polls, suggest that they want to remain as long as possible in their current homes and apartments. And there's so many factors, obviously, that influence that decision. But one of the factors which I think is very important is whether or not we're living in a place where we have what I call good social connections, whether we have friendships and good neighbors and people we want to associate with. And the reason, of course, is that these people are important in our lives. They're good for our emotional well-being. They help us. They give us information. They're good friends. And all told, they make a difference in whether or not what the experts say we're aging successfully. That is, whether or not we're living happy, enjoyable, and independent lives, I would argue depends very much on the kind of people we associate with. And in that regard, one of the questions that come up, and it's a controversial issue, yes, is whether or not we should live with people our own age, or whether or not we should live with younger people, all ages.
The ubiquitous over 55 community, where people are not even allowed to move in unless they're a certain age, or is that not for you? I think that's what's being posed now because it's being developed now. What's your take on it?
Well, that's very true. I mean, one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas in the country right now is in Florida, and it's called The Villages, and it's an active adult community geared to people who want to enjoy, and excuse the terminology, a hedonistic lifestyle. They want to enjoy life. They want to have fun. They want to have pleasure. And they're quite content with living with people their own age, and probably because the literature suggests is that they're like each other. They share histories. They share the worries and the concerns of getting old, but they also share the desirability of trying to maximize, and this is important. They want to maximize their enjoyment in the present. And, you know, there's a whole theory on that, actually. It's called the distance-to-death perception. That sounds horrendous, I know, but
right,
as you reach a certain age, you sort of become aware of the fact that mortality is down the corner. And so your response is, I want to do everything I can to enjoy life in the here and now.
You know, I notice, and I have done some studies on this, that women who are older wear a lot of jewelry. And empirically, I asked why. And the answer was, if not now, when am I going to wear this jewelry? So
exactly,
need to do the things right now, whether it's jewelry or having a good time or meeting new people or travel. So, but as you and I discussed before the show, there is this new woke trend. Oh, no, everything should be intergenerational, including where you live. Again, you do so much research on this. What's your take on it for now, for the current elder?
So what we have to really always keep in mind is that when we talk about older people, this is a very diversified group. They were diversified when they were younger, and then they deal differently and are afflicted differently with both the joys and the problems of getting old. So it's a very diverse group. And why this is important is that everyone looks at themselves and thinks about themselves and evaluates who they are differently in old age. And that very much influences whether or not they'd like to live with people their own age. So, for example, you know, there's a whole group of people who say, you know, I like being with people my own age because I can share all my concerns and worries. You know, we both have aches and pains, and he or she understands me, and they know
mutual
what I'm going through.
Right.
Mutual complaining.
Right.
And they don't have to make excuses about the fact that they're not working. You know, there's a much in the literature and the common parlance of saying, you know, you want to keep productive as long as possible, and that's very good for many older people. But there's another group of older people that say, you know, I was productive my whole life, and darn it, I want to just enjoy life now. And I'm not interested in being productive. I'm not even interested in volunteering. Horrors. I know that's a big thing now. They say, you know,
yeah,
want to volunteer. I just want to enjoy life.
Yeah.
I just want to enjoy life.
Play pickleball.
And it's not only, by the way, these age 55-plus communities. You know, there's lots of communities you hear word of mouth that have historical landmarks or college towns, or just have word of mouth that they are attracted. They attract new retirees, and they go there. These are unplanned places, but the places have gotten a reputation as being sort of an attractive place for people to retire. They buy a second home, or they rent a place, and these places are also concentrated with people of the same age as well.
So we are talking today with Dr. Stephen Goland. He's a professor at the University of Florida. He is actually a Fulbright Senior Scholar Award recipient. He's a fellow at the Gerontological Society of America, and he does a lot of thinking about where should we age. So what we've discovered now is let's shift our thinking as we go on to our next segment in a moment. From where do I want to live with first, who do I want to live with? And I'm going to leave you, Dr. Goland, with this question. In 1992, you wrote a book, one of your many books, Housing America's Elderly, Many Possibilities, Few Choices. Beautiful title, Housing America's Elderly, Many Possibilities, Few Choices. So you just pointed out to us that there's the ones who are interested in leisure, ones who would like to work to their last days, their last breath, like me, ones that are comfortable in age-based communities, ones who are not. When we come back, I want to ask you, since 1992, when you wrote that book with that very challenging Few Choices title, has anything changed? We'll be back in a moment to see if we have all those choices that we would like to make. Once you personally have decided, who do I want to live with? Your next question is, where are they? Can I afford it? What's available to me? How do I find them? Or do I just throw up my hands and say, you know what? I'll see if I can put a grab bar into my bathroom, and I'll just stay here, and I'll age in place. You guys don't go anywhere because we've got the expert right here. We'll also tell you how to get more information about this because you're probably thinking about it right now.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age, da 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 da, da 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 da. 'Cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age, da 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold. Generation Bold, the fountain of truth. I'm going to give you a few events coming up a long time from now, but very worthwhile thinking about. For those of you who are on the West Coast, you might know that in the October 6th through 8th, RadFest is going on. That's everybody legitimate and a little bit not so legitimate, too, with booths showing you how you can live longer. That's where the cutting-edge thinkers and innovators in longevity tell you the right pill, the right device, the right technology, and we go there and we look at it and we say, I don't know, maybe yes, maybe no, and others we get crazy over and really tell you about. So I'm very interested not only in you living longer, but living healthier for real, not just spending your money on elixirs, but also not avoiding everything because you can't trust it. So that's coming up. For those of you on the West Coast that are interested in your own, let us call it biohacking, just take a look at RadFest. That's RAADFEST. I'll be there as press. The next thing that's going on, and also in October, is the IDOP with the United Nations. You know I'm on the NGO Committee on Aging, and we have this year my favorite topic. It's the Year of the Older Woman. And we will be able to do that, we just decided, virtually as well as you showing up at the United Nations, although this year it will be a live event in New York City. So all kinds of great things going on. You just keep in touch with us. And please go to adrianberg.com. That's my name, ADRIANABERG.com. Go to contact Adrian and tell us that you would like to be on our mailing list for all of our free online events and Facebook events and so on. So today we are speaking with Dr. Stephen M. Goland. He is the thought leader, one of the really great thought leaders. People listen to him. So remember, when he talks, people build, right? Because he is the Aging in the Right Place specialist. He's done so many books, so many papers for the field. And he teaches it. I mean, he's the professor at the University of Florida that people listen to if they want to be in the field of elder housing. So we ended up, Dr. Goland, with a reference to a book, one of your many books, but this one was 1992, so it's a while ago. America's elderly, many possibilities, few choices. Question, are there more choices? And if so, related question, how do we find them? How do we know what's out there for us if we want to make a change in where we're living?
Well, let me just start with a little bit of a detour. And you brought up the older woman theme, which is, of course, crucial in old age because we know that the population of older people in this country is getting older, and because women have a higher life expectancy than men, as the population gets very old, we're going to see a society that is especially top-heavy with older women. And the idea that there are choices out there is important, and I'll get to that, I promise. But one of the things we have to recognize is that many older people are so attached, emotionally attached, to their home for all kinds of reasons, that even though there's lots of choices out there for them to choose from, they show a reluctance to move. And let me start something which is going to sound sexist, but it's a generational thing. The past generation of older women often got their status, their position in life, because of who they married, right? And that's,
yes.
I know this sounds very sexist, but there's cases in which, for example, an older woman was very active in the community. She volunteered. She was she worked part time or full time, but her husband was a world renowned physician, or a CEO of a company, and he dies. And we're very fickle in our society. Is that once in a while, even though we held these people in high esteem, when one of the spouses dies, that reputation and that status often dies with it. So all of a sudden, this older woman finds herself in a situation where she's not exalted as she once was. But she lives in this beautiful house, in this beautiful neighborhood, a very high-end neighborhood, that shows that she was a very successful and achievable woman in her past life. She is reluctant to move from that neighborhood because she moves from that neighborhood, that status of the neighborhood and all the reputation that it holds
disappear.
Would suddenly disappear. And that's troublesome. And that's a deterrent. Even though she could move all kinds of other places, this holds her back, not necessarily in a bad way, but even though there's lots of opportunities out there, she decides not to move because this is, after all, where she acquired her status and her wealth and her reputation and where all her friends are. And so even though there might be more attractive opportunities from an objective perspective, an expert perspective, she opts to age in place.
So, you know, I'm going to broaden that because my mom was somebody who lost her husband when she was 40 years old. And so
yes.
her reputation or status or brand never had to do with that. But she would not move. And she would
yes.
move from a studio apartment for a very similar reason, hard to see it subtle. And that was she was giving up her status as an independent person. Her
yes.
idea of going into even a 55 community or an assisted
yes.
living community particularly, and certainly into a CCRC associated with a nursing home, was she was losing her brand as a tough old bird. And that killed her, in my opinion.
Absolutely right. That's absolutely true. And I would argue that sometimes we confuse the idea of living with people our own age with something else, is that we don't want to live with other people who we think are much older in appearance or in actions than ourselves, because we don't want to associate ourselves with someone who we view as more frail or less active or less vigorous than ourselves. There's lots of interesting literature on this, and the idea there once was an active adult community, for example, and had both a long-established population of older people in it. And then there's a whole new wave of older people came, and they were younger old. And believe it or not, even though the oldest participants wanted to welcome the new entrants and welcome them and show them around, and the younger older people say, we don't want to have anything to do with you.
Oh, yeah,
we're not
exactly
as old as
right.
you.
Mm-hmm.
So
no,
we want to keep to ourselves.
It's interesting because when you scratch the surface of a senior problem, you find ageism. And often that
Absolutely.
Ageism is against the self, one way or another. And when I talk about my mom, my audience knows I blame myself for not being much more forceful. Why?
Yes,
because
yes.
I didn't want to see her as old either. Because
That's
I,
right.
as a child, did not want to see her as old. And I'm wondering, though, when we come back, I want to talk about the new boomer generation and our choices, because we are different. Most of the women
yes.
did work. Of course, we're talking about a westernized, a fairly privileged category of elders, but still, those are most of the people listening. They do have choices. They have financial choices. And it's hard to think about the boomers in exactly the same way as we might think of the silent generation or the greatest generation, which is themselves practically gone now. So when we come back, we
I
want
agree.
To see if there's been a shift, if there's been a shift. And, you know, there's the hoo-ha you mentioned about, oh, we're all going to go and lifelong learn. We're all going to go and become yogis. We're all going to go around the world. How true is all of that in what's available? And how can we kind of make better friends on all age levels and not think in terms of age being so essential to who we love and who become our friends? I don't know if that's too idealistic, but we'll talk
No.
about it when we return. Don't you guys go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da da da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the fountain of truth, the fountain of truth about aging. All the housekeeping that we're going to do now, because I really want my guests to have as much time as possible, is tell you to simply go to our website, adrienneberg.com. Let us know that you want to be in contact with us, and we will send you almost everything we do is free of charge, information on online events, 90-minute discussions on successful aging, wonderful resources from all over the world, and even very soon how to start your own business after the age of 50 and how to get the best integrated health care. So all you do is go to adrienneberg.com, say, let's keep in touch. We'll put you on the mailing list, and you'll get emails that really will light up your life. Now, right now, probably what you're thinking is, where is the right place for me to age? What will really make a difference in my health, my longevity, and my happiness? And there's a man who actually has an answer because he spends his life researching and writing about it. His name is Dr. Stephen M. Goland. He's professor at the University of Florida. He has 3 pages worth of publications, at least. But I'm going to start, Dr. Goland, with another publication of yours, the most recent, and bring it together with what we were just discussing. One of his most recent papers developed a theoretical model to explain smart technology behaviors of elder consumers and how they can adapt and adopt technology. Now, without talking so much about technology itself, that gives the implication that there's new things out there as never before that allow older adults to maybe live in places they couldn't before, to maybe even stay home in better ways than they could, to actually have more choices. Unlike your 1992 book with the subtitle, Many Possibilities, Few Choices. So the question is, with all the new technologies and all the research that you share, are there new things? Are there more choices for us?
So I think there's 2 important takeaways from your question, Adrian. One, I think, is that the dwelling itself, the apartment building, the house, is going to become far more important as a fulcrum of where we live and a fulcrum of where we get care and a fulcrum of where we can live independently. And the second takeaway, and I'll talk about the first and the second, is the idea that the advances of new technology and new transportation options and new ways in which we get goods and services is going to allow older people in many ways to appreciate and enjoy their preferences of staying put in their current dwellings much longer than they have been in the past. So in the first sense, we have the possibility now of the home becoming a much more important place. Why so? In contrast to previous generations, we have the ability now to get more of our goods and services and our medical assistance right in our own homes than ever before. And I'm talking about something now that of course, we now are beginning to take for granted, but it's becoming blossoming. We're talking about the simple Amazon model, where you not only get your everyday goods, but also increasingly your drug prescriptions.
Your food.
And, of course, you know, it's sort of an ironic. Once upon a time, if we had food delivered to our house, it was sort of a negative thing. We say,
meals
what?
On
you
wheels.
Unreal. It was a stigma, negative stigma. Now it's a status symbol. Now it's a status symbol. You get food delivered to your own home. But just as importantly, as you suggested initially, is that there are new technologies that are maturing and becoming more widespread. You know, it takes time for new technology to be widely adopted by the population at large. You can think about cell phones. Once upon a time, a very small number. Now, of course, everyone has one. And these technologies clearly are going to allow older people to do a couple of things. One, they're going to allow them, for example, to live in a safer dwelling, because if, in fact, something's wrong with the house, if they have an accident in their house, there's the possibility that, much stronger possibility, that someone can come to their assistance in a timely manner. So that's very important. But just as importantly, the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, was a wake-up call. And, of course, not just older people, but younger people, but older people found themselves stuck,
very isolated,
and that's the word,
stuck
in their houses, in their apartments, and
isolated.
It forced them, encouraged them, not everyone, unfortunately, but many of us, encouraged them to use technology that they perhaps only had given lip service before. I'm talking about, of course, FaceTiming. I'm talking about Zooming.
Zoom.
I'm talking about interacting with people without them actually being in our house and without us having to visit them. Is it the most desirable? No. But if you, in your later years, are finding it more difficult to get out, then these are important devices that will prevent or have a strong possibility of preventing you from feeling socially isolated and alone. Is it perfect? No. But I think what these are going to get even more elaborate. We have the whole possibility of these virtual realities where, in fact,
yes,
we'll find ourselves in somebody else's home. It's hard to imagine. And yet we'll still be sitting at our own house. So I think in that sense, new technologies will make it easier to remain much longer in our own home. In my own instance, for example, I used telehealth for the first time in near COVID. I had never used it before. And to my amazement, the doctor actually said, would you take some deep breaths? I'm going to watch you. You know, hard to believe. But the point is that things that we normally would have had to leave our houses to get to some places are going to be much less necessary than in the past. But even more so, when we do want to leave our house, it's going to be easier.
So let's
I think
talk
that
about
we're
the
going
good news
to...
and the bad news there for just one moment, because I do want to talk about mobility, transportation, and so on, because it's
okay,
all the difference in the world.
Oh.
But for right now, as we wrap up here, I'm going to throw you a very big problem, and I'm going to not expect the solution, but at least address it directly
okay
from what you just said. We know that younger people are struggling with relationship issues because they're almost entirely online, because that is what they do, and they don't see people necessarily in person, and they don't see people. If they do, they will sit there with a person and be texting somebody else or looking at their screens, a small screen like a phone, while they're with someone else. Now, here we have an issue for the younger generation. For the older generation, they are just now, because just what you said, COVID created a teachable moment. Many people who never used relationship technology used it. And because we can stay home and not go into communities, we probably will be like the kids. Our friends may come through social media and social connection. We are getting training on how to use technology, but I don't know if we're getting any training or thought leadership on how we can really get deep relationships, the kind that have been shown keep us living longer through technology. Everybody's so busy trying to teach us how to use the computer, they're really not teaching us what they're trying to do with the kids, which is how to relate through technology. Now, you're at the cutting edge of all this stuff. Do you see any even discussion about that issue?
Probably not. That's sort of a deadpan answer. The technology offers tremendous possibilities. The people developing this technology have genuinely good intentions, and they're increasingly trying to design the technology so that it is usable and friendly for persons who have not grown up with technology throughout their whole lives. But we're still at the stage where the concern is usability of the technology as opposed to what I call the collateral damages that result
yes
from using technology.
Yes.
And these include everything from privacy concerns to the idea that somebody else is going to be calling the shots in terms of how we get health care or whether or not we're diagnosed as being healthy or not. The problem, of course, of cyber theft, of course, is always
right
a concern. The concern that that older people have is that they might lose control in the sense that a family member who might normally have visited says to the older person,
sure,
well, you're okay because,
who,
you know, I can check on you.
Yeah.
I can check on you. Everything's
absolutely
okay. I don't have to see you. I don't have to see
no
you. And so
no doubt.
I wish I had an answer, but I don't have a ready answer how to stop that change.
Yeah. Somebody once said, never spoil a good question with an answer. Because what it really does is it keeps us thinking and maybe developing in the right direction. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask an even tougher question, which is show me the money. A lot of the things that we are so excited about in housing, whether it's technology, aging in place, digital health, cost money. We may be developing more haves than have-nots, and we will be discussing that with the man himself, Dr. Goland, who is a thought leader in the area of aging in the right place. We'll be right back.
That doesn't bother me, not even a bit. appropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And I have to tell you that I think it's about 5 or 6 years that we're doing this show almost every single week. And you'd be surprised that this is the topic, where should we live, that has the most spokes to it, that takes the most intense concentration, because it is one of the transitional life decisions that we'll make after retirement or around retirement or even way before retirement because we're thinking ahead. This is a tough subject in a time of great technology, of pandemic, of understanding that loneliness is worse than smoking for your healthy longevity. There is a lot of things to unpack. And in looking at this and thinking about it, we can rely on the thought leadership of Dr. Stephen Golant. Now, I introduced you several times. He has many, many books. We cannot take his time to give you the list, so just go to Amazon. But I want you to know how to spell it, G-O-L-A-N-T. And please know that at adrienneberg.com, this, including where to find everything of his and his list of books, will be on our website, on the home page. So please do go there. Go there as soon as you see on our social media that his show is up. You'll be able to find that on our social media. As please go to adrienneberg.com, contact, tell me your email address, and you'll also get our alerts as to when Dr. Golant is on. You can also go and meet him on LinkedIn and connect with him on LinkedIn. Just search for that, linkedin.com/pub/Stephen Golant. Go to Amazon, Stephen Golant. But you can also read some of his consumer articles at BoomerEncore.com, BoomerEncore.com. All right, so now the connections have been made, Dr. Golant, and I want to talk about a topic that I actually grew up with in this field because I was an elder law attorney, and that is, how do you pay? You mentioned, let's say, telehealth. Well, telehealth is now covered by Medicare, but that only happened last year during COVID. There are many aspects of telehealth that are not covered. There is this wonderful choice you told us about in an over 55 community, not an over 5, getting technology into your home. Are you looking in any way or studying payers for any of these things? Will any of these technologies be covered perhaps by insurance? Where do you see that aspect going for the future of, let's say, our baby boom generation?
So the initial response often by insurers is that it's too expensive to cover. What they often fail to completely telescope into the future is what happens if older people are not receiving services when they need them. And what we know over and over again is that an initial cost by an insurer, by whether it's a government or a private company, often pays off in spades, because what happens is that it reduces the likelihood of more serious, for example, health episodes in the future that would be far more costly to the government or the private payer than otherwise. Here's an example, a very simple response. We know that some older people still have difficulty, for example, using the Uber app, and they call Uber, ride sharing or Lyft,
right,
in order to get a ride. Well, Uber has contracted with some healthcare companies and healthcare organizations so that the healthcare organization can themselves secure the Uber ride for their older client or their older patient. And one of the reasons this is so important is we know that sometimes, unfortunately, older people often miss their appointments because they have trouble getting there or because they lack the motivation, or they feel there are barriers to getting to the healthcare providers. They need a little incentive. And as a result of missing the appointment, some problem becomes worse or some diagnosis doesn't take place. And in the end, they need more care than if they had, of course, carried
right.
forward and got the appointment in the first place.
Not to mention the burden on their kids to leave school
yes.
or home to take them to the place.
So in our community, for example, Gainesville, Florida, they had a small program, and they still have it actually, where the local government is actually subsidizing the rides of Uber.
Hmm.
And you can ask, well, isn't this expensive? But think about it. Compare it to subsidizing a ride on Uber, compare it with having to develop a whole infrastructure of paratransit, like special buses to take people
right.
from one place to another, where you have to, of course, you're paying for the cost of the bus and the operation of the bus and the infrastructure for the bus.
Right.
Careful research, I think, would show, and we haven't shown it yet, that it's far cheaper in many respects, and also never mention the better outcomes that you get from the point of view of older people getting better service, it's far cheaper often to provide this kind of subsidy than not. And even though it's an initial expensive cost, in the long term, it's actually will be less of an expense burden on government programs or on private insurers than if they didn't take that action.
So what we need, and what I'm hoping and I'm hearing from you, is logic and creativity. There's a big conference that most Americans never even heard of called the Washington Conference on Aging. It takes place every 10 years under the Older Americans Act. And the last one was 2015 with Obama. And he actually had Uber there. He had Airbnb and Uber. And those who know that Chip Conley was the head of Airbnb at that time, when he left, Airbnb was so strong, he built something called the Modern Elder Academy. Because what he saw about Airbnb, which really, if you think about it, is a bunch of hotels owned by individuals, but that's not what he took from it. What he took from it was that we were building a sharing economy, and it was making a lot of sense. So the ability to cover some of these things might come from a public-private a collaboration, like you just mentioned, of public companies, private companies that provide transportation, and the public policy to cover it. Now, this
and I think we have to be imaginative. We have to be imaginative, Adrian. I mean, I'm so tired of hearing one of the main, you know, we talk about something called aid-friendly cities.
Yeah.
And the first recommendation was to provide more public transit in our neighborhoods. That sounds very good. It sounds very good. But in fact, it's highly unrealistic. The majority of older people today are living in low-density suburbs where the potentiality of having public transit is next to zero. And the ability to reach public transit is next to zero. So I think we have to think imaginatively. I mean, I think the idea of the new technology of the driverless car is probably outside my future when before it becomes widespread. It's going to be an incredible boom for older people in the next 20 years. I just think we have to be imaginative, not only in our technology, but how we fund, as you say, how we fund and support that technology.
I think that the wonderful opportunity is to think at that 360-degree level, because where you can get to will have a lot to do with who you can meet, how much socialization you can have, how many friends you can have, where you're going to move to, and once that happens, where you're going to have things built. So it's all one piece, and yet we're still in these silos in the field of aging. So I thank you so much for being with us and for being one of those people, because I can see from who's reading your books and the kind of thinking you're doing that you're also breaking silos between the builders, the healthcare people, the technology people, all realizing that they're working for the same goals and that what one does affects the other almost like a domino effect. So we thank you so much, and please remember everybody to go to Amazon, to go to LinkedIn. We're speaking here with Dr. Stephen Golant, G-O-L-A-N-T, a rare opportunity to have somebody who's a thought leader in probably the biggest issue that we can face as individuals as we age, which is where is the right place for us to live. Thank you so much, Dr. Golant.
Thank you so much.
And for everyone else, I will say what I say every week. Get out there, kids, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.